Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, first chapter, text 27, which does not have a purport. And so I'll chant that one and read the translation myself, and we'll chant 28 together. Okay? So I'll chant this one myself.
Dvijanuni sutalam vishvamurtir uru dvayam vitalam chatalam cha mahitalam taj jaganan mahipate nabastalam nabi sadogrananti.
Translation. The knees of the universal form are the planetary system of the name Sutala, and the two thighs are the Vitala and Atala planetary systems. The hips are Mahitala, and outer space is the depression of his navel. Okay, text 28.
Urashtalam Jyotir Anikamasya. Urashtalam Jyotir Atikam Asha. Gritva Mahar Vadanam Vajanosya. Griva Mahar Vadanam Vajanosya. Tapo varatim bitter adi pumsa. Tapo varatim bitter adi pumsa. Satyam tu sirshani sahasra sirshna. Satyam tu sirshani sahasra sirshna. Urushtalam Jyotir Anikamasya. Griva Maharbhadanam Vajanosya. Tapovaratim Bitter Adipumsa. Satyam Tu Shirshani Sahasra Shirshna.
Vaishnavis,
Ura
high. Shtalam place. The chest. Jyotir Anikam the luminary planets. Asya of him. Griva the neck. Maha the planetary system above the luminaries. Vadanam mouth. Vai exactly. Jana the planetary system above Mahar. Asya of him. Tapa the planetary system above the Janas. Vadatem forehead. Vidu is known. Adi the original. Pumsa personality. Satyam the topmost planetary system. Tu but. Sirsani the head. Sahasra 1,000. Sirshna one with heads. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The chest of the original personality of the gigantic form is the luminary planetary system. His neck is the Mahar planets. His mouth is the Jana planets. And his forehead is the Tapas planetary system. The topmost planetary system, known as Satyaloka, is the head of he who has 1,000 heads. Purport. The effulgent luminary planets, like the sun and the moon, are situated almost in the midplace of the universe. And as such, they are to be known as the chest of the original gigantic form of the Lord. And above the luminary planets, called also the heavenly places of the universal directorate demigods, are the Mahar, Janus, and Tapas planetary systems, and above all, the Satyaloka planetary system, where the chief directors of the modes of material nature reside, namely Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva. This universe is known as the Vishnu is just previously referred to here, is known as Shiradakshai Vishnu, and he acts as the supersoul in every living being. There are innumerable universes floating on the causal ocean, and in each one of them, the representation of the Virat form of the Lord is there, along with innumerable suns, moons, heavenly demigods, Brahmas, Vishnus, and Shivas, and all of them situated in one part of the inconceivable potency of Lord Krishna, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, text 24. Chapter 10, text 42. Thank you. Om Aginatam Adam Dasha Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurudeva Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhijdam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Upagadamayam Dadati Swapadatakam Bandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shah Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Sagana Ragatam Vitam Tam Sadivam Sadvetam Savirutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sahagana Lavitam. Hey Krishna Karana Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagapate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosate Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishavanusate Divi Pranamami Hare Pray Vanchakapadurubhischa Kripa Sindhu Vyavacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhuna Chananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasati Govarda Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay, so here we have the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is non-different from Krishna, and it's trying to help us. That's what's going on here. This is chapters called, as Bhajanarayan Maharaj pointed out there, the first step in God realization. And it's presenting this Virat Rupa. And the idea is that this Virat Rupa is something, it's a way for people who on that first step, the lower level, to start their God realization. See? It's an opportunity. And it's once again, as I said, it's Krishna, who's non-different from the Bhagavatam, trying to help us. True to the purpose of yoga. The purpose of yoga, any yoga, bhakti yoga, we're of course practicing bhakti yoga, but there's jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga, karma yoga. The purpose of yoga in general is to elevate the living entities. Prabhupada states that very nicely in Bhagavad Gita chapter 6, text 3, in the first couple of sentences, of the first three sentences of the purport. I'll just read you those sentences. It says, the process of linking oneself with the Supreme is called yoga. It may be compared to a ladder for attaining the topmost spiritual realization. See, so that's the purpose of yoga, to enable one to attain the topmost spiritual realization. Okay? Then it goes on to say, this ladder begins from the lowest material condition of the living entity and rises up to perfect self-realization and pure spiritual life. See, so that's interesting. It says this ladder begins from the lowest material condition of the living entity. So the Bhagavatam, the Vedic adventure, is there for everybody. It's not just for Paramahamsas. Krishna's trying to get everybody. You know, he's trying to get living entities at the lowest material condition. Okay? That's stated elsewhere. I mean, Sukadeva Goswami, in some verses to come, chapter to come, will say, Kirata Hunindra Pulinda Pulkasha Abirda Sumba Yavana Kasaraya Yene Chapapa Yarapashrashraya Shujanti Tasmai Pabhavishnave Namaha. He's basically enumerating all these races of people who are considered they're Vedic outcasts. They're outside the Varnashram system. They're lower. You know, they're, but sometimes you'd hear Prabhupada say, fifth class, sixth class, tenth class men. That's them. You know, the Kiratas, the Hunindas, the, right? And Yene Chapapa, and even more sinful. But Sukadeva Goswami is saying there in that verse, Yadapashraya Shraya, if they take shelter of the devotee of the Lord, then Shujyanti Tasmai, then they get purified, Prabhavishnave Namaha, by the power of Vishnu. And it's Vishnu works through his devotee. So if somebody takes shelter of the devotee, then it doesn't matter. They could be yene chapapa. They could be really sinful as you could possibly get. But by the power of the pure devotee, who's empowered by Vishnu, they can be shujanti tasma. They could be purified and elevated. And that's consistent with what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, right? Ninth chapter, Krishna says, Mamhi partivai pasvritya ye pisuya papayonaya studiya vaishas tatasudras te pi anti param gatim. That even if they're born of lower, even if they're of lower birth, women, vaishas, sudras, if they take shelter of me in, you know, in devotional service, they can be elevated. They can achieve the supreme destination. So there's many, many, many more verses to that effect, right? That's just a couple of them. But and that's the general idea, the theme of one of the, you know, themes of the whole Vedic literature, that you know, people can be elevated, people can be delivered. In the Krishna book, in the prayers of the personified Vedas, the personified Vedas are offering prayers glorifying the Lord, and it says it is of all his glories. His greatest glory is his compassion, his mercy on the fallen conditioned souls. So that's the whole idea. And so consistent with that point, that's what's going on here in the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is reaching out, trying to give everybody a chance. It's like Krishna saying, okay, you can't appreciate me personally. You know, you're not impressed by me as a person. Well, maybe you'll be impressed when you see me driving by in my brand new Rolls Royce or my new yacht or... It's like that. And actually, that Prabhupada uses that analogy back in the first canto, chapter 3, text 31. He says, the Virat Rupa is like that. It's like somebody, they appreciate the minister when they see him in his motorcade, in his brand new shiny car with all the guards around them and stuff. Then they, oh. So it's a chance, to appreciate Krishna at some level in some way. And as Bhadranarayan Maharaj pointed out, it's not the ultimate, it's a step. It's a beginning, something. And then Krishna will, works with you and takes you through. So it's very nice. We're very fortunate to be part of this tradition. But here's an interesting thing. Here's something to consider, though. So here is the motivation is great. Okay, we can all agree upon that. The motivation is great, but is it accurate? I mean, here the Bhagavatam is describing the universe. It's talking about a satyaloka planetary system, and then a heavenly planetary system where you got tapaloka, janaloka, maharloka, and then doesn't mention it, but then below that is bhuvarloka, bhuloka, and then atala, ratala, all those talas, you know, going down. But we get a different description, you know, from science. They don't describe the universe like that. You know, the scientists aren't, they're no dopes. I mean, look at all the stuff that science has given us. This wonderful microphone and, you know, on and on and on. This, you know, Patrick, wherever you look, we're enjoying the results, the products of science and technology. So, you know, it's obvious these people, they've got some brains. Look at all the stuff they've produced. Yet at the same time, on the other hand, despite, you know, our lives have been made more convenient and comfortable in so many ways as a result of the advancement of science and technology. At the same time, we can see the world's a mess. You know, despite the fact that we have so many amenities, you know, cars and comfortable dwelling places and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, internet and, you know, transportation, communication, the world's a mess. People are at each other's throats. They treat each other horribly, and they treat the animals worse. The world is moving, planet is moving in the direction of a garbage dump gradually. You know, there's a pool of garbage. The size of Texas floating around in the Pacific Ocean, right? Size of Texas. Texas is a big state. That's all the garbage just floats out there, and there's some sort of, the current goes in such a way that it kind of keeps it there, and it's getting bigger and bigger. It's not getting smaller and smaller. It's getting bigger and bigger. So, you know, so many examples are there. So, and also the scientists, as far as their ideas go, they change their, picture, their philosophy, their ideas. They don't stay the same. What scientists are thinking now is different from what they thought 50 years ago, what to speak of 100 years ago, what to speak of 200 years ago, what to speak of 500 years ago. They change. Whereas on the other hand, you have the Bhagavatam, you have Krishna consciousness. The knowledge is given to us by acharyas. It's standard. It's the same now as it was 5,000 years ago and older and even before that. The acharyas are men of ideal character. And they offer a process. They don't just say, "Well, you got to believe this, and that's it." They say, "This is the truth, and here you do this, and you'll realize it yourself." Which way? What should we? How do we know who's correct? Who's giving the correct description here? Now, one response to that, who's giving the correct description is, one response could be, "Well, who cares? What difference does it make? What difference does it make which description is correct? My life goes on, will go on the same, regardless of whether there is a satyaloka, tapaloka, janaloka, mahaloka, or whether it's just, you know, planets expanding out into all directions ad infinitum. What do I care? I mean, my life is going to be the same. I got to get up tomorrow morning, and I got to, you know, do my things." People have to, you know, you have to get up and go to work or whatever, you know, get your food and clothing and shelter. On one level, it doesn't make a difference, but it makes a difference in this sense, that this is a philosophy that accompanies these different descriptions that we're getting, these different pictures of reality, okay? The Bhagavatam is giving us a description of reality, and that's, you know, great. But the philosophy that goes along with it, and this is what's significant, is that behind the creation, there's a God with a plan. There's a God with a plan. Now, it's like the origin of time, space, stuff, life, consciousness, etc. is a person, an unlimitedly powerful, intelligent, and loving person. And he's created this world with a plan. Right? So, and that's significant. Whereas the other picture of reality. The other description, you know, which is we get from the scientists, the philosophy that goes along with that is that somehow or another, you know, by some process, the Big Bang, steady state theory, whatever, you know, there's a bunch of them out there and they change. Somehow or another, time, space, life, time, space, matter, life, conscious, have just sort of come about. They've come about. Now, the implication of that is, a philosophical implication of that, is that existence precedes meaning. And specifically, existence, according to that, you know, that description of reality, existence precludes inherent meaning. So I'll explain that. Okay. In other words, in the how would you say it? The physical description of reality, no God with a plan in the picture at all, then existence comes first. You see? In other words, it was a bang. So that's existence. And there's no inherent meaning. Inherent means built in, because there's no God with a plan. Knows whatever meaning people are, you know, presenting in life, we build it in. We assign that meaning. It's arbitrary. You know, there's, in other words, there's no absolutes. There's no absolutes. There's no cosmic justice. There's no rules. There's no order. It's just, you, life is what you make it. Now that might sound kind of nice on the one hand, but there are problems with that. Right? Anyway, so it's up to us.
How do we know?
We have to choose. Who are we going to believe in? Whose word are we going to take? How do we do that? Well, what do we do? Well, one thing we could do is we can hop in our spacecraft and head out to a nice, safe place in the universe. Spacecraft equipped with the most powerful telescopes. And then when we get in a good spot, we could turn on the time machine function and go back into time. Just turn it, keep going back into time and watch what happens. And then see which, and you know, see if what we're observing resembles the science picture of reality. Now, obviously, that's ridiculous. You can't do that. There's no such spacecraft. There's no time machine that enables you. You know, you can't witness that. It's happened, and that's it. So that rule that one out. Okay. Well, we could take one's word against the other, one's word or the other. And I already kind of mentioned some of the reasons why, you know, the pros and the cons of accepting one or the other. And another consideration would be, you judge a process by the result. What's the result? What's the result of one worldview, as opposed to what's the result of the other worldview? Okay. Today, predominantly, people are being influenced by the physical worldview, the materialistic worldview, the one that sort of states that somehow or another stuff, everything happened. You know, time, space, matter, life, consciousness has just somehow or another happened. And, you know, there's no inherent meaning to life. We assign it, and you just get on with it, you know. Now, so that's the predominant worldview today. You know, it's whether it's enunciated, whether people actually, they live in it, you see. You might tell me, I walk on my toes. If I look at your shoes and I see they're worn out on the heel, then I can understand, no, you don't walk on your toes. Because look, your heels are worn out. So people could say whatever they want in this world, right? But you could tell from the way people are living, the focus is totally on creature comforts, you know, increasing the comfort and the pleasure material without considering these other things. So you could tell what the philosophy is. Reverse engineering. You can understand what people's heads are really at by just reverse engineering. And you can understand that it's a very materialistic way of thinking. So that's there. And now, once again, we have to make a decision, right? Well, fortunately, Krishna has an opinion about all this, which he expresses in the Bhagavad Gita. In the 16th chapter, 5,000 years ago, he analyzed this situation, and he has something to say about it. So let's see what Krishna has to say about this situation. Hare Bol, yeah. And he said this 5,000 years ago, which is pretty far out. So this is what he says. He kind of 5,000 years ago, Krishna kind of knew what was going on. It was happening then, I guess, and he could see that what was going to be happening. He says, this referring to this chapter, Divine and Demoniac Nature, and here he's talking about demons, okay? The people who have that worldview that everything just happens somehow and like that. No God, no purpose, no plan. So they say that this world is unreal, with no foundation, no God in control, okay? They say it is produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lust. And those, all the causes are physical, purely physical. There's no God with a plan like that, okay? Then he goes on to say, following such conclusions, that conclusion, what I just read, following that conclusion, the demoniac who are lost to themselves and who have no intelligence, Krishna, as far as Krishna is concerned, they have no intelligence, no real intelligence. They might be clever. They can produce so many things. We could see that. You can't deny that. We're using them every day, right? But that's different from intelligence. Intelligence, Prabhupada defines earlier in the Bhagavad Gita, it's the ability to, it's discrimination. Specifically, being able to discriminate what's matter, what's spirit, and who's the controller of both. In other words, what's temporary, what's eternal, and that's intelligence. Not being able to manipulate matter and create things that make us so supposedly more comfortable in material life. Okay, reading on. So Krishna says they have no intelligence. And what he says they engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. Okay? So this is Prabhupada's comment on that. He says, the demoniac are engaged in activities that will lead the world to destruction. The Lord states here that they are less intelligent. The materialists, who have no concept of God, think that they are advancing. But according to Bhagavad Gita, they are unintelligent and devoid of all sense. They try to enjoy this material world to the utmost limit, and therefore they always engage in inventing something for sense gratification. As I read this, I just think, man, this is so accurate, you know. Such materialist inventions are considered to be advancement of human civilization, but the result is that people grow more and more violent and more cruel. Cruel to animals, cruel to other humans. They have no idea how to behave toward one another, period. Animal killing is very prominent amongst demoniac people. Such people are considered the enemies of the world because ultimately they will invent or create something which will bring destruction to all. Indirectly, this verse anticipates the invention of nuclear weapons, of which the whole world today is very proud. At any moment, war may take place, and these atomic weapons may create havoc. Such things are created solely for the destruction of the world, and this is indicated here. Yeah. Due to godlessness, such weapons are invented in human society. They are not meant for the peace and prosperity of the world. So that's Krishna's opinion. And it goes on. He has more to say about it. So as far as Krishna is concerned, if the materialists, because, you know, actually there are, one thing that atheists sometimes say is that, you know, you could be an atheist. You could be somebody who doesn't believe that there is a God with a plan at the beginning of the whole thing, but you don't have to be like an evil person. I mean, there are atheists who are wonderful people. There are atheists, really honestly, there are atheists who they make a decision to look after the sick and look after the poor and do all sorts of nice things, right? That's there. It is there. I mean, it's not like a lie. There are atheists who do that. Actually, the philosophy I was describing is kind of existentialism. That existentialism is actually the label that they give it. It means that no inherent meaning and purpose to life. You no absolutes you create. Life is what you make it. You create your own meaning. And that there are people who try to be good people, but without God in the picture. Okay? So that sounds pretty reasonable. But the problem is that, or at least my observation is that human beings, especially in this day and age, are not virtuous by nature. If left to their own resources, the general mass, the majority, will not gravitate towards such altruistic and humanitarian activities. They will be, you know, get entangled in the, you know, expressing their greed, their lust, and their anger. See, so it's a problem there. There might be a few, you know, there's a few who will do those things, you know, help the sick and the poor and this and that. But the vast majority and the most powerful, which is significant, they won't. They don't go that way. And we can see, if you look at the world, it's an example of that. So, we have to consider that. And the thing is, you have to consider. There's no question of not. Well, you cannot make a choice. A person could not make a choice, but by not making a choice, you're making a choice. I'll explain. Just say, for instance, say we went down to, tonight, we went down to the Santa Monica Pier, and we put a dinghy in the water off the pier. And you know, we just decided that we're not going to rope this dinghy to the pier. We're just going to sit in the dinghy. And tomorrow morning, we'll just hop up out of the dinghy onto the pier and come back. Okay. But, you know, what you define what happened is that tomorrow morning, you won't be anywhere near the pier. You see, because it doesn't work like that. When you're in the dinghy, it's a current. The ocean's going to pull you and push you. And you could be like a mile or two out into the ocean. See, so it's like that. See, it's not, you can't be like in a neutral zone where we're affected by association. And you have to make a choice. Not making a choice is making a choice. If you don't make the choice to take shelter of what we've been given, then the default position is that whether you consciously decided or not, you're making the choice to take the association of that other worldview, that other picture of reality or understanding of life, and you will be influenced by it as such. You see? Just like if you, I remember when I was in high school, they had us perform this experiment. You take a really hot, iron hot rod, and you stick it in a tank of cold water and leave it in there for a minute. And then when you pull it out, they have you take the temperature again. You know the temperature. At first, you know the temperature of the water. It's 32 degrees, okay? And you know the iron rod's at about 212 or whatever, you know? And then after 1 minute, they have you measure. And sure enough, the temperature goes up, and the iron rod, the temperature goes down. It's obvious, right? That's what happens. Why? Because there's an exchange of energy. There's an exchange of energy. So that's what happens. That's what we always hear about association, right? Why? And, you know, we always hear that that's an important thing. Be careful. Why? Because that's what happens. There's an exchange of energy. With whatever and whoever you associate, there's an exchange of energy. Okay? So if you don't make the decision, if somebody doesn't make the decision to try to become Krishna conscious, you got to understand, it's not just my analogy. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, text 5, he says, Nahi kaschit shanam api, jata tishtatiya karmakrit, karyatehi avasha karma, sarva prakriti jagana, that all men are forced to act helplessly according to the impulses born of the three modes of material nature. No one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. And the Prabhupada says that unless one is engaged in the good acts of Krishna consciousness, one will be forced to act according to the dictations of the illusory energy. You see? So it's just, you know, that's how it works. You gotta make that decision. Because if you don't, then you're just going to be forced to act according to the dictations of the illusory energy. Okay? So, where is I going with this now? Lost my train of thought. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Can somebody help me? What was I about to say? If you don't decide, you're going to get carried away by the modes of material nature. Yeah, so you have to decide. You have to make a decision. And now somebody might say, but wait a second. If say I make a decision to become a devotee. But still, when I become a devotee, I have to go out. You know, part of being a devotee is going out and trying to give Krishna consciousness. So I'm when I'm preaching, I'm going out and I'm meeting all these people, and I'm getting that association anyway. I'm still going to get. It doesn't work like that. What happens is when you're preaching Krishna consciousness, you're not associating with the people that you're coming in contact with. Superficially, you are. But you're really you're associating with Srila Prabhupada. You're associating with the predecessor acharyas. You're associating with the philosophy. You're associating with the internal potency. Why? Because you're doing what you're doing on that instruction. You see, so that's your actual association. Association is a matter of consciousness, where your consciousness is. See, so when you're going out to preach, your consciousness is, I'm doing this to serve my spiritual master. I'm doing this to serve the predecessor acharyas. I'm doing this to serve the Krishna consciousness, you know, the mission, like that, Lord Chaitanya. See, so you're associating in that way. You're daivim prakritim ashrita. You're under the protection of the internal potency of the Lord. See? So you're associating. So therefore, the people you come in contact with, you're giving them, they're getting the benefit of your association, but you're not being disadvantaged by their association, if you're, to the degree you're taking shelter. And just going out, you're taking a lot of shelter. You know, you don't have to be perfect. Just by making that decision, you get a lot of mercy and a lot of protection just by making that decision and choice to go out. Lord Chaitanya, Prabhupada, the Acharya, they appreciate that. It's not easy. It's a sacrifice. It's you know, it represents a real effort to do something, and they give you a lot of mercy and a lot of protection. So you're not going to get dragged down into material consciousness as a result of going out and preaching. So, what time is it? 8:16? Okay. Well, I guess the conclusion is Krishna consciousness is a good thing. Everybody should do it. Does anybody have anything they'd like to say? Yeah.
Comes from Krishna. Sarva Chaham Ridisani Vishnu Mata Smritir Gyanamapohanam Cha. From me come knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. Also, the body, the human brain, is a very strong computer that's created from a higher intelligence. And so, that originally they think it's just their genius. But the intelligence coming from within, we know it's coming from the super soul, it's coming from Krishna, as well as this opportunity at human life. So that's just one point that I thought was, by the way, a wonderful lecture. Really nice. Just wanted to say that.
Yeah, they're intelligent. People are intelligent. The human body, the human being by nature is intelligent. But the problem is, it's misdirected. Well, according to Krishna's definition, they're not. We heard Krishna say they're not intelligent. They're clever, like anything. You know, they could be intelligent if they would properly use their free will and take shelter of the philosophy and try to understand this philosophy and think a little bit, you know, more deeply. But they're not. And so they use this amazing body that they got, the incredible human brain computer, to, you know, come up with all this stuff. But it doesn't. It's not really helping them make progress towards the actual goal of life. Yeah, you want to say something?
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you for your wonderful presentation. So you mentioned that when we associate with another person, we exchange energies. And you gave the example of the iron hand and the water. So is the same to say that when we associate to someone, we exchange karma? Also is the same? Like we exchange karma? Like karma? Or is something different?
Well, my understanding is you get karma when you actually do something. You know, you got to act, right? But you'll be influenced by other people's mentalities if you're associating with them and thinking, feeling, willing. See, so you know, the association means you're going to be influenced by where they're at, their existential position, where they're at in life. You're going to be influenced by their mentality, and then to the degree that you take on those their thoughts, their way of thinking about life, then you will feel a certain way, and then you'll perform activities, and then you get the karma. When you actually do something, then you get the reaction. But just by associating with them, until you do something, I don't think that's a problem. But the point is, that you're not associating with them. If you're with somebody for the purpose of giving them Krishna consciousness, you're associating with Prabhupada. You're associating with the Acharyas. You're associating with Lord Chaitanya and Krishna. So superficially, it seems like you're associating with that person, but your real association is with the internal energy. That's it. Well, okay. Yeah. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. I think there is some room, if you would explain about our position regarding the scientific worldview, like cosmology. Do we think of it to be wrong, or do we think of it to be just different? Like it's different perspective with respect to like what Bhagavatam is proposing.
Yeah, I have to say we think of it's wrong. Otherwise, why are we doing that temple of Vedic planetarium? You know, Prabhupada's idea for that temple in Mayapur that they're building now was, I mean, beyond, this is my understanding, and I actually talked to Judhakarma about this, and he confirmed it. He said he thought it was the correct understanding. Prabhupada's idea wasn't just to have a big, beautiful temple, you know, for Radha Madhava and the Panchatattva like that. I mean, nothing wrong with that. They do need a big, beautiful temple, and they've outgrown the temple that they're in. But Prabhupada's thing, when Prabhupada was talking about the temple of the Vedic planetarium, his thing was always, I want a temple that shows the universe according to the description in the fifth canto. You see? That was Prabhupada's thing. He wanted a model to show that people could come to like a planetarium. Vedic planetarium. Not like it would be a Vedic planetarium. Something that shows the universe as it's described in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam. So why would Prabhupada emphasize that so much if he didn't think it was correct? Prabhupada's idea was that's correct, and what they're coming up with is not correct. And I know it's radically different, and I'm not a scientist, and I'm not a Vedic scholar either, unfortunately. So, but I think that's, we should be having that, we shouldn't be all accepting. We shouldn't be thinking that, yeah, actually the scientists, when it comes to that kind of stuff, the scientists know better. You know, they know better because they have their instruments and they have their telescopes and they're this and they're that. So they really know better about that stuff, but we know better about spiritual things and religious things, and maybe, you know, we shouldn't be thinking like that. At minimally, we should be thinking, the Bhagavatam's right, even though I had to meet a scientist face to face, I probably couldn't argue with him and defeat him in an argument or convince him otherwise than what he's thinking, but at least I'm going to be of the conviction that the Bhagavatam's right, and those guys don't have it right, and even if I can't understand it completely, what to speak of, convince him, even if I can't understand it perfectly myself, I got to have that, maintain that conviction. Does that make sense? Anybody else? Okay, thank you very much. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Here, 10 is here, you know, the way it's written in the book. And this is cool. Thank you.